Hi, I'm Bob. I'm an alcoholic. Service to the grace of God in AA since the 10th of December, 1967, and for that I'm very grateful. And I have been asked to introduce Ralph. Ralph was the man they sent to replace Clancy, who was to do two things, Ralph. About 35 or 30, I don't know, a long time ago, Clancy called me up, middle of the week. What are you doing Saturday night? I said, I don't know what I'm doing Saturday night. He said, well, I do. You're giving an AA talk in Joliet, Illinois. I said, okay. And I got on the plane and went to Joliet, and I walked into a room with 1,500 people. And when I walked in that room, they had not announced that Clancy was not coming. And in those days, it's still a big deal, but in those days, it was a really big deal. It was a one-night affair, and they sold all these tickets, and you could have heard the groan go through. It took about 25 minutes into the talk to supplant the idea that there was another body in the room. It was a difficult deal. This nice weekend. This Woodstock phenomenon is new, and I think it's kind of a new genre, and they're doing a lot of it these days. But I do think, as they say, we get something different. I think we get a different depth and a different sharing that we do, and I enjoy it, and I think it is a contribution. And Lee was, I think Bob Darrell is really responsible. I think Bob did the first one, and then everybody's kind of copied that. Lee has kind of taken it to an art form and been planting it around the country, and so it's been nice. And I feel like I get to know the people better in the sharing that happens almost than I do when they give their talk. I thank Rick for calling. I want to thank Ed and Reba for taking Linda and I out to dinner last night. That was very nice. Was that last night? God, it's just unbelievable that I seemed like a week ago. I started drinking when I was 13 years old, freshman in high school. 4'11", 95 pounds, second smallest kid in my class. I'm one of seven kids. Mom sent the oldest one to school early, and I was kind of like right at the cutoff, and I was one of the youngest kids in my class. And, you know, you got a big mouth. I'm trying to catch up. I get there, I feel like everybody else has got it together. I don't. Kind of felt like everybody else had a meeting in the morning at school, and I kept missing the meeting. They decided what was going to be done for the day. And I got to be a marginal member of the in-group, which is about as good as it got. And that was okay. I went to a military high school and a college campus. It was very serious. You screwed up. You were shining shoes for a week. It was a pretty tight ship. And somewhere about my freshman year, I picked up a drink, and it altered my life. I had that wonderful experience that we all talk about. It was instantaneous. It was like I found the secret. It was what that sense, when they talk about that sense of ease and comfort. I mean, I found myself. I was at parties with seniors. You know, if you showed up as a freshman, they say you'd be shining shoes forever. And all of a sudden, I was able to move with an ease and comfort, places that I didn't belong and couldn't do. And I loved it, and I chased it as hard as I could. We drank in high school like most people drink in college. We had fraternities. There were some arrests. We were playing house. Our parents were the hard-drinking, you know, World War II people, and cocktail parties were the order of the day, and we kind of emulated that. And it was pretty cool. And I got a reputation for drinking heavily, you know, through that process. Got arrested a couple of times. I thought my drinking problem was that I was underage and I had too strict a father. And I got, you know, some drunken driving that I got reduced, you know, to the deal. When I went away to school, one of the big ideas was that I'm going to get away from that authority. And I drank my way out of the University of Notre Dame in the middle of my senior year. I'm in the yearbook, have my class ring, and I walk out. Hey, that's our story. I mean, that's our story. I could stop right now. You know, we're we have a little trouble completing things. Polly had a moment of Al-Anon. She had a slip this morning when she talked about focus and finish. Just kind of slipped out, but you can kind of see how she's managing things, can't you, in that process? When I listen to Polly, I listen to love. It's just a feeling I get. I just get a feeling of love and comfort. It is really a wonderful thing, and I've had that ever since I came in. They started talking to me about drinking problem when I was still in high school. I didn't buy it. I got diagnosed an alcoholic when I was 19, did not buy it. By that time, once or twice a year, I had these near-death experiences, car accidents, arrest problems. And I started going to a psychiatrist diagnosed me. I remember going down to school my senior year. I was beaten up, robbed, rolled, pistol whipped, shot at, thrown out of the second story of a hotel. Now, I'm 20 years old, and won't bore you with the rest of that story, but I talked my way out of a psych ward and went down to finish my senior year. And remember, I'm in a library getting a book on alcoholism, and it turned out to be a Freudian-based book, and it related alcoholism to latent homosexuality. And as unwilling as I was to take a look at alcoholism, the combination was just brutal. There was nothing I was going to investigate in that process. And they used my room as a study hall. I was in civil engineering, carrying 25 credits a semester. I kind of cribbed and crammed my way through the first 3 years. And, you know, it's kind of tough to bluff your way through a thermodynamics exam. And finally, I just quit. I just couldn't stand it. And I had to get a medical release. I was due to be commissioned in the Army. The Army released me for alcoholism. I came home, finished school. When I finished school, my father, who I love and is my hero and model, was my hero and model, called me and said, you've got to leave. He said, this is not working. There's seven kids in the family. You're a mess. It's you and I, and he and I were nose to nose all the time. And I left. And I got a job at a liquor store. It's important to use your gifts. And I worked at that liquor. This is the last year of my drinking. It is... I worked at the liquor store for about 6 months. I was stealing booze. I'd stock, and I put a bottle in the empty boxes as they came up the conveyor and put it out in the alley and then came back at midnight and picked the bottles up out of the cardboard boxes. It was embarrassing going back and making amends for that. I got fired for moments of truth. We're telling a little story today. I'm drinking. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. I'm making deliveries. I back the truck out of the driveway. I knock over a kid on a bicycle under the truck, not under the wheels, under the truck. I pick the kid screaming. I pick the kid up, run down the alley. I'm standing in front of the house I was born in. And the neighbors start to come out, and I'm in trouble until they find out my last name. And St. Paul is very neighborhoody. It is just, you know, it was like a Catholic ghetto, and we all went, you know, and you don't own the house until you sell the house. So, you know, the people who bought our house bought the Bazan's house. You know, that they didn't buy the Jones house, they bought our house. But I remember having that little six-year-old girl in my arms, and it was just, who are you? How did you end up here? How did you go from... What road were you on? What process are you in? What is, you know, the curtain pulls, I go back drinking, I lose that job, I go get a job as a waiter, I'm living on Skid Row, I'm drinking a quart a day, get up in the morning, go to work from 10 to 2, drink from 2 to 5, buy a pint, go back to work, shack up with whoever I'm, you know, Dr. Seuss, that child author, those are actual photographs of people I live with during the last year of my drinking. And this last year I'm dilly-dallying trying to figure out what the service is going to do with me. And I go to a party, get my face kicked in, I get fired. I've got no place to go. And I went back to my family and asked if I could move back in the house. They allowed me to move back, reluctantly allowed me to move back in the house, asked me not to drink. I couldn't not drink. I started into withdrawal. I reacquaint myself with Linda. Linda's at a party. I am very drunk. My face is caved. We have an argument about what happened when, and we're both too old to remember what the hell happened. But I asked her if we could get back together. I have a breakfast the next day. I met with her and asked her if we could get back together and seriously consider marriage. And she said yes. At that time, she was a psychiatric nurse working in an alcohol ward. So while she's very attractive, she's not very bright. And so when I moved back in the house, I really tried to change my life. As much as everybody else was upset with me and couldn't figure out why I was such a mess, I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me and why it was such a mess. I did not like it. I had high values and good examples, and I had stuck most of them in the dirt. And so my moment of truth was a few weeks before I moved back. Well, no, I forget how this all goes, but anyway, I had an apartment for a while, and my moment of truth was I woke up, and I was hugging the toilet. It was 10 o'clock. I had missed work again. Had no explanation. It was sicker than a dog. And I called Alcoholics Anonymous and got an old-timer down central office, and he sent out two guys to go see me. I met him at a cafe about a mile from the home I live in today. And when you're young and in trouble, you get put in front of every kind of... My parents tried everything they knew how to try. Doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs, bishops, nuns, priests, psychiatrists, psychologists, friends, recovered people. They did everything they knew how to do to figure out what was wrong with this little jerk. And I go meet these two guys. One guy had 6 years, one guy had 6 months. They sat me down on the roof. They said, "We're from Alcoholics Anonymous. We had a drinking problem. We found an answer for it in AA, and we want to share it with you. We hope it helps you. If it doesn't help you, don't worry about it. For some strange reason, it helps us talking to guys like you." And they shared their stories with me. I had never talked to another person with a drinking problem. And they changed my life. In an hour or an hour and a half in a cafe, two guys who were very different than I was sat me down and told me their drinking story. And I went to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that night and started a journey that was to change my life. I drank twice after that, once on a business trip to the West Coast after I had 30 days. I was told to call AA. I didn't. I got drunk. I got in trouble. Came home, got 3 more months of sobriety. Linda and I were remarried, and I drank on our honeymoon. I think I had that planned. I didn't tell anybody. I did not discuss it with anybody, but I think it was in the back of my mind. I'm such a sneaky little guy. I mean, sneaky with myself. I mean, I really don't, but it sure popped up the moment. And we honeymooned in Mexico. You know, the divers dive off those cliffs in Mexico. I dove off those cliffs on my last drunk. I was in the audience watching a world's high diving contest. I thought, God, that's not so tough. And they dive from about 120 feet. I got up to about 80, 85. I split my swimsuit, cut my leg. I'm up there. This horse's ass. I'm stuck. I mean, it's tough enough climbing up. Climbing down is out of the question. I'm watching the waves, trying to figure out whether to jump or dive. And finally figured, screw it. And I dove. And God watches after fools and drunks, because I made it. If I would have jumped, I would have died. You have to get out about 30 feet to hit the middle of the channel. 10 years later, Linda gave me a picture of the chasm at Loch Abroad, and said, "There, but for the grace of God." We were watching the divers dive. It was 11 o'clock at night. And I said, "This is the dumbest thing I have ever done." And she said, "It's not even in the top 10. I don't know how you can share a life and see it so differently, but came home, turned myself into my sponsor, and I had my last drink on the airplane on the way home, December 10th, 1967. I had the same sponsor that I walked in the front door of Alcoholics Anonymous with. His name is Warren McGinley. He's 91 years old. He is 56 years sober. He was the 12-step champion of the Uptown group of Alcoholics Anonymous. He was a mailman, and He sat me down in a chair in the first couple of weeks, and he said, alcoholism is a disease. I did not know that. I don't know what the hell I thought it was, but I did not know it was a disease. I guess I'd never thought about it. And he said, it's physical, but it's also mental and spiritual. What we do in Alcoholics Anonymous, once we cross the line from problem drinking, once you cross the line from problem drinking to alcoholism, your alcoholism affects you all the time, when you are drinking and when you are not drinking. Brand new idea. I'd been exposed to a lot of help. The idea that my alcoholism could affect me when I was not drinking was a new idea to me. He said, we do an Alcoholics Anonymous once we take our last drink or drug, as we use the 12 steps to change to find a different way to live that's sufficiently better than the way we lived before, so that we don't have to go back to drugs or booze to do something for us that we were unwilling or unable to do for ourselves. If you don't change, you won't stay. No idea. And that was like the Gettysburg Address of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he got me active. I gave my first talk in a prison. That jerk said, we're going out to Stillwater, and we'd like you to come. I said, I don't want to come. He said, we'd like you to come. I said, look, I'm a month sober or 2 months. I don't think. He said, for God's sake, there's five of us. We want you to come. So I get in the car. We go out. We have dinner. We go into the full security prison. There were six of us, but there were six meetings. And I'm in my little blue suit. Guy asked me for a cigarette, gave him the whole pack. I am 23 years old. It took me half an hour to figure out I was not going to die in that room. If I could have gotten my hands on my spine, and he thought this was really cute. This happened to him, and he still smiles about that. And my only revenge was I got to take his car away when he turned 85. And his son wouldn't have the conversation. He still refers to it as, I won't tell you how he refers to that conversation with me. I said, okay, I buy it. I'm an alcoholic. If I'm an alcoholic and Alcoholics Anonymous got the answer for alcoholism, I've got a lot of other things that are going on in my life, and if I got the problem and you got the answer, those ought to be resolved. And it might take a year. It might take 50. I had great difficulty connecting all the chaos of my life with swallowing bourbon. I really thought bourbon was my answer. I did not think it was my problem. It relieved the pain. Not everything that I did seemed to be connected with drinking. Hell, as time went on, I had more and more trouble because of drinking and more issues. But I still had living issues and trouble identifying. I had some very simple unmanageability that would drive in my life. I had trouble getting up in the morning. Later on, found out that that had something to do with when I went to bed, but I did not know that at the time. I spent $200 or $300 more a month than I made. 1967, please remember. If you do that over a long period of time, you're going to end up in debt. I just want to report that to you in case you're running that one. You don't know where that goes. We started to have children, and we had two boys, and I was loud, impatient, angry, immature, and sometimes violent with my children. I'm not proud of that, but that is an accurate report of how I was in that process. I had a gambling problem, more of a hobby. It was 6 or 7 hours a day, 4 or 5 days a week. It was not that big a deal. But I was making $5,000 to $10,000 a year playing backgammon. It was kind of like a second job. And I used to say I didn't have trouble with my marriage, and Linda said, yes, you did. You just didn't know it. And I had some trouble getting to work. I had trouble staying at work, and I had some difficulty working at work. Other than that, I was a pretty good work. What's so funny? I mean, this is new. I mean, please tell me that I'm talking at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I suspect this is not new. I had all these problems. They were not annual, monthly, or weekly. They were daily. None of them made my first inventory. None of them. My first inventory was a recitation of the worst things that I had done, the things that I was most ashamed of. I did not get into causes and conditions. I did not understand it at the depth. I read the book. I must have gone over my head. I did it in the form of a general confession. I was a Catholic. And so I started to take this program on and do the thing. I got very, very active. My sponsor, we did an enormous amount of 12-step work. And I got into the book. I did the steps. Did them in a more simple way than many of us outline and interact with the steps today. But I did them in a serious, in a way that I wouldn't go back and redo them. I did them the way I did them. I mean, the first time you do a fourth and fifth step, I mean, it's like a first grader art project. I mean, it is not, I mean, it's important, it's wonderful. You put it on the icebox. I mean, it is not, I mean, your parents frame it, your sponsor loves, I mean, it is, but it is not the art project that you're going to have when you're 5 years sober, or 15 years sober, or 20 years sober. Couldn't be more important. You can only do what you can do when you're a year sober. You don't need to do a 10-year sober job when you're 1 year sober. Not only can you not, you don't need to. You do not need a master's degree to do a four-step. It is not that complicated. And so I'm a very active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to five or six meetings a week. I'm sponsoring guys. And one by one, the issues that I just explained to you came at me. And one by one, I took them out. And my idea was, you know, my idea was, you get me sober and I'll learn how to be a husband. You get me sober and I'll learn how to work. You get me sober and I'll be a father. You get me sober. And I wasn't able to do those things. I'm figuring, what's wrong with me? Something's wrong. Don't know what the hell it is. Something's wrong. I should know. Other people seem to know how to do it. I had the most attractive group of men and women. It was just astounding that this 23-year-old kid stumbles in this group and these men and women took me into their hearts. That was my home group, but it was true of most of the meetings that I went to, and it was a wonderfully welcoming process. And I found myself, the first two or three years, those issues started to bother me. In the fourth and fifth year, they really started to bother me. In my fifth and sixth year, they started to eat my lunch. When I first came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a wall built up around me so you couldn't see what I didn't want you to see in my life. Thinking that went on behind the wall, said, you like me, but you only like what I let you see about me. If you could see everything about me, you'd hate me. Hell, I hate me. It's a pretty good sign. Something's wrong. But at some point in time, I got to the point that we all get to. I started to tear the wall down. I said, hey, come and get me. Don't care who you are or where you come from. Just come and get me and help me not be who I am anymore. I can't stand me five more minutes. And for the first time in my life, I shared the whole deck of cards with someone. I never shared the whole deck of cards with someone. But I started to share it when I called Alcoholics Anonymous. I continued to share it in conversation with my sponsor. And when I took my first, fourth, and fifth step, I let the whole thing go and I made a discovery. And the discovery was that I'm not unique. My personality may be unique, but not my illness, not my behavior, not my experience, not my feelings. And I started to get a profound sense of hope that would work for you, could work for me. That's not a small deal. Most of us come in here with a profound sense of uniqueness. If that doesn't get reduced, most of us look for the differences, not the similarities, and we work our way out of Alcoholics Anonymous. That needs to be reduced. That was reduced for me. What happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous is, as I started to get more active in the program and progress, and I had this wonderful honeymoon for about the first 9 months to a year in Alcoholics Anonymous. And then as I started to progress into my work life and married life and parenting and those sorts of things, I started to run into me and the issues that I, the unmanageability that I had. And as I took them on and I started not to do very well with them, I started to have problems that I didn't want you to know I had. I had a well-established pattern of not letting people know what was going on in my life, but I didn't have it in AA. The first year in AA, I'd tell you whatever the hell. You know, my first year in AA, I'd ask a question, you gave me an answer, I hadn't answered. During my second year, I'd ask a question, you gave me an answer, and I wasn't sure you were right. My ego started to assert itself, I started a self-thinking process. But when I started to have problems that I didn't think I should, you know, everybody's patting me on the head, I'm the youngest guy in a group for 2 years, I'm everywhere, stark raving sober, on every committee doing all this stuff. And so I started to build the wall back up. Thank you very much for helping my drinking problem, but stay out of my sex life, stay out of my marriage, stay out of my parenting, stay out of my finances, stay out of my gambling. Brick by brick, sober and Alcoholics Anonymous, going to a lot of meetings, I built the wall back up. I found myself 6 years, 7 years, 8 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous with my wall back up, with a sense of isolation and a sense of pain that I had when I first came in Alcoholics Anonymous. And this seemed pretty familiar to me. And it's kind of the story of my life. Good starter, poor finisher. And I thought, here I am again. The one thing that really was magical for me, Alcoholics Anonymous, even that's not working. I thought if I had to go to a program for every problem I had, I'm going to be a busy guy. I mean, I'm already, you know. And I did not know what to do. By the way, I thought I was a really lame member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think that experience that I had is not a unique experience. I think it happens to most of us. I think almost all of us get our ashes hauled somewhere between 5 and 15 years of Alcoholics Anonymous. There comes almost a second period of time where you got to start dealing with the next layer of stuff. And if you don't deal with it, your life is not going to be fulfilled, the opportunity that you have to. But I'm dying. And I'm not thinking about drinking, but I'm thinking about killing myself. I am 32 years, you know, how old am I? 7, 8 years sober. I'm 20, 32 years old, and I'm dying. And the two things that have saved my bacon in Alcoholics Anonymous is I can't keep my mouth shut, so I'm talking some about what's going on. My sponsees are making more progress than I'm making. I'm going to the club. A new guy comes in with a cup of coffee, tells me about that bushel basket full of manure. I tell him with absolute confidence that if he gets in the program, gets a sponsor, and gets in the book, and tries to do the step, doesn't have to do them perfectly, stay with us, do the deal, you're going to be okay. Then I get in the car and I drive home at night and I think, when are you going to be okay? You're sober 7 years. You just bought a $400 sport coat at a store that you had a $600 bill at. When are you going to quit spending money you don't have to buy things you don't need to impress people you don't like? I am... I stole that from Cecil Cordigal. I didn't have an answer. The other thing that has saved my... I'm telling my sponsor 65% of what's going on. And I know in Maryland you do 100%. I think that's really terrific. But the truth is, I'm only telling myself 65% of what's going on. You don't see it when you're in it. Life is lived forward but understood backwards. You only see it when you look back on it. You do not see it when you're in it. And the old timers, I've had a love of the old timers since I've been in. I would hang out. I can't tell you how many nights my sponsor and I and two or three other guys brought the sun up talking about AA. We would talk all night. You know, we'd go to the open house, the monthly open house that we have. The women would either drive home or go in the bedrooms and go to sleep. We'd just stay in the living room and we'd talk till dawn. It was just that exciting. It was just that, you know, full of it. And I started to see I had to find out what God had to do with Wednesday. I had a pretty good parochial education and I knew a lot about God, but I didn't know as deeply as I needed it. I didn't know it in a way that made a difference. And my life's in trouble, and I'm in trouble. Now the problem I have is I go to God, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out that I've got to make some changes. It's like going to your dad for help. I'm going to knock on the door, God says, who's there? Says, God, Bob, what do you want, Bob? Well, what do I want? I'm 8 years sober, my pants are in fire. I need help. And, okay, I'll help. And then I'm going to ask God what all of us ask when we're pants are in fire. What do I do? Okay. What do you think God's going to say? Get up in the morning. Go to work. Work at work. Stay at work. get on a budget, which I think is an Al-Anon term. I do not. It's not in the book. It is. Stop gambling. Be gentle and kind with your wife. Be gentle and kind with your children. Man up. Get a life. Now, I'm going to say if I could do all those things, I wouldn't need God. I mean, what the hell do you think I've been trying to do for the last 8 years? That's exactly what I've been trying to do for the last 8 years. This is not news to me. And if that's so, what's the use of developing a relationship with God if you can't fulfill the conditions of the relationship? And I was stuck in that place for 2 or 3 years. And finally, out of desperation, I went back to the steps for the third time. First step, no-brainer. Unmanageable, you bet. Powerless, you bet. Second step, complete surprise. I lost the second step. I believed it for you, and I believed it for us, but I didn't believe it for me. I'm 8 years sober. I'm on the down escalator going up, baby. It is, I don't know what's wrong, but it is the story of my life. And it is old, it is tiring, and I don't finish anything. And so I had to regain step two. I started to see people with bigger problems than I had, with dignity and grace, walking through the steps, walking through the walls that I was trying to avoid. I have spent most of my life avoiding pain, the easier, softer way, getting through things with my mouth. And doesn't work. And I took step two, and I started to believe that God would restore me to sanity. I took step three with my sponsor on my knees in his office. We didn't do that in those days. But I started to hear these guys from California talk about it. I thought, what the hell, I'm going to try that. A little awkward, but okay. Did my third four step. I think the best four step. I was in a lot of pain, and I was down, which is a great way to be when you're doing that, because the ego is ground down. And I did my four step, and then I did my fifth step. And I said, when you do my fifth step, I said, be careful, because whatever you recommend, I'm going to do. I said, I feel like I'm dying of thirst lying next to a lake. I am so sick and tired of what's going on that I could just die. And when I was done with my fifth step, we talked and cried a little bit. And one of the things he wanted me to do is go to a psychologist. And I God, it takes me so long to talk. So I go to a psychologist. He wants to get my wife involved. I don't want my wife there. The conversation's always different when your wife's there. I mean, it is. And he wanted my kids there. I didn't want the kids there because I was embarrassed about how I was as a father. And in a less articulate way than I would normally do, what I discovered in the meeting of that room. So my business is going broke. I'm about thinking that I'm in danger of filing bankruptcy. I don't know. I'm busting my ass 2-3 hours a day, and it's not working. And and a magical moment, he looked at me and he said, why are you so afraid of failing? And I almost hit him. I mean, my reaction was to jack him. I did not. And I said, look, I've lived in this town all my life. I'm in the investment business. I'm about to lose everything I had. I said, nod your head up and down if you understand that. I said, you're a doctor. You lose everything you have. You just take your little sign, walk down the hall, pound it on another door, and within 6 months you're making $100,000. I'm about to lose everything I have. He looked at me and he said, if you lost everything you had, would you lose? He looked at Linda and he said, would he lose you? And Linda said, no, wouldn't lose me. He looked at the Billy and Peter and he said, you know, same question. No, wouldn't lose us. If you can't lose, you can't play. I'm a salesman. I don't make sales calls. I just phony up activity reports. I don't even take the chance that you're going to drag me across the desk and force me to sell you something because I'm not there. And what I discovered, I've taken 3-4 steps, is fear. It's fear. I mean, I thought fear was dogs, snakes, and tall buildings. I mean, I am afraid of being a parent. I'm afraid of being a father. I'm afraid of being a husband. I'm afraid of failure. I'm afraid of success. I'm swimming in fear, and I don't see it. And not too long after that, I went home, and I had my moment of truth in my living room at about 7.5 or 8 years of sobriety. Linda and I are falling apart at the seams. Linda's dad died. This is like 1975. We missed the international because of your father's health. And I had a horrible day. Missed work. Or I went to work late. I came home early, got in a backgammon game, won $600, missed dinner, missed the AA meeting, came home, got in a fight with my wife, and slapped one of my children. One of those days you'd like to have videotaped and sent to the General Service Office to show what 8 years can do. And I said, gee, it happened again. And I said, it happened again. Weren't you there? Yeah, but it's so habitual, it's like it's like I'm in a blackout. It like almost happened, and all of a sudden I realized that was a bunch of crap. It didn't just happen. My life was the way it was because I designed it that way. I sounded like a guy who wanted to quit gambling. I wanted to gamble whenever the hell I wanted to gamble, for as much money as I wanted to gamble and not have problems because of gambling. I wanted money without work. I wanted my wife's and children's love and affection without spending time with them. Not a very good design. And all of a sudden I realized that I had tried as hard as I knew how to try to clean my act up, and I had failed. For some reason, that was okay. That thought at that moment was a moment of grace, and I was allowed to take the sixth and the seventh step at a depth that I had not taken the sixth and the seventh step, which is we were entirely ready to have God remove our defects of character, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. I had spent 6 years trying to get rid of them. I do not have the power. I have the responsibility. Okay, but I am the pipe, not the well. It happens through me, not by me. I got down on my knees. I took the sixth step of all, six and seven step, and four of the major problems that I've been struggling with disappeared that night. I stopped gambling that night. Okay, I started dating my wife. I dated my wife every Friday night for 30 years after that. I spent thousands of dollars and hundreds of hours trying to learn how to be a better parent. I think having children is like having a bowling alley installed in your head. I think it takes 125% of whatever you have to go through. It's a great privilege. It's not to be missed, but it is a demanding process. And I turned the finances over to my wife, who happens to be a good manager of money and does not have the ego issues that I have with money. And to this day, she manages all the household affairs with respect to money in her home. I made appointments with my sponsor about when I'd go to work and what I would try to do at work. I remember I'm selling real estate investments, and I go out. I've got to go out to the General Mills headquarters, big, tall building, and I've got to go make a call and try to sell someone an investment for $10,000. If I make that sale, I make $1,000. Now, at that time, I'm making $12,000 a year gross. I get on the elevator. I have to say the third step prayer to get my butt out of the car to go do what I know is not going to work. But by this time, you know what the crazy thing is? Is I made work an AA activity. I could do AA. I just couldn't do anything else. I couldn't do marriage. I couldn't do parenting. I couldn't do work. So I made work an AA activity. And I did it with God because I don't like doing things alone. I would not. If my job was cleaning the garage alone, it wouldn't happen. If a sponsee comes over to the house, we could clean the garage. And for some reason, that would work out better. Or if my sponsor came over. My sponsor used to come over and he'd hang all the pictures in the house. I don't like to do anything. And, well, I like supervising. I take that back. So I go up, I make the call, I make the sale. Make $1,000. And I'm in the elevator coming down. This is like 1975. And I get this thought. You know, if a guy did that regularly, and my life took off like it was on a rocket ship. In the next period of time, I never made less in a month than I made in a year prior to that, for the rest of the time. Such is the power when we talk about what happens through 6 and 7 and 8 and 9 and what happens through the step work. My power was restored, and my life changed enormously. For the next 10 years, I made enough money to burn a wet elephant. I was in the real estate investment business. 1984, they passed the Tax Act. Between 1984 and 1990, I went broke. And I lost it all. We had a big house. It was paid for. We had two or three Mercedes. We had all the stuff that you would... This is my deeply shallow period. I am the guy in the very expensive suit with a very expensive tie coming to the meeting in his Mercedes, thinking God has blessed me because of what a wonderful member of Alcoholics Anonymous I am. How would you like me in your group? So while there are problems with failure, there are some issues with success. There is an element of arrogance and ignorance, and I was arrogant without... I mean, it was just nuts. Remember, I asked the man who is now... My life is changing. It's a really difficult time for me in some ways. I'm gone. We were just away for 2 months. My sponsor's 91 years old. For the last 10 or 15 years, he really hasn't been my sponsor. He's been more like my dad. I bootlegged that together with different friends that I have at Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm a little goosey with that right now, and I'm not sure what... He's going to be my sponsor till he dies, but I'm not sure exactly what framework I need in that process. I have a spiritual advisor who has been the main man for me for quite some time, and he is 87 years old, dying of cancer. And so I'm in Mexico for 2 months. I fly home because he's dying, and then he gets well. I said, God damn it, I got on an airplane... And I came here because you were dying. Make up your goddamn mind. I am not, you know, split the ticket with me or do something. I mean, this. But I remember going to him when he said, what do you want? And I said, I want to be more loving and less materialistic. And within about 6 months, I started to lose everything I had. And I said, we got to talk. I said, what I meant when I asked that is I want to keep the stuff and be less materialistic. We laugh about that today. That was one of the most important... I had to learn who I was with money and who I was without money. I learned that lesson. Sold the Mercedes. Did the whole... Got my life in order. Got my life in balance. And then things started to get so good I forgot the lesson. I learned it for 10 years. And then I unlearned it. And I have just been relearning the lesson the last 2 or 3 years. If you do not learn the lesson while you're in school, the universe will bring the lesson back to you. The universe is relentless. That is what... And the most surprising thing to me that I have learned in my walk in Alcoholics Anonymous is how much we are afraid of change. I think if I ask most of you in the audience how many of you are ready to get rid of the things that don't work and are hurting the people that you love and care about in your life, almost everybody would say, sign me up. But the fact is, when we get in front of it, most of us can't do it. The problems we have are old, they're not new. They're persistent. We have so identified with them, we actually think they're part of who we are, not what we do. We don't no longer identify. We identify with them. And they're ours. They're me. They're us. They're, you know... And as a result of that, they are so immersed in our ego and so immersed in our identity with our minds, we can't envision doing that. I find with most of these Woodstock deals and most of the stuff that we do, there's more teaching today about the steps in Alcoholics Anonymous than there ever has been at any point in AA. You can go out to the table and you can get Bob, Herb, Jill, Polly, Mari, on the 12 steps. And most of us go to that process, I think, that we're going to learn something. We're going to get a tip. Something's going to happen. I'm stuck. I'm stale. It's not working. We come to a seminar like this, and we get enlivened. We get into this conversation. And in this serious conversation, everything's okay. In this moment, everything's okay. We came to this hotel... with the noise in our head, with the problems, issues, and the circumstances that we're dealing with, and then we get in this room and we come together. One of the reasons that it's okay is one of the magical things about Alcoholics Anonymous. We are sitting in a collective consciousness. It's like, to some degree, we check our heads at the door and we come in here and we have a collective head when we're in this room. It's like meditating in a group. If you ever tried meditating in a group, it is much easier to meditate in a group than it is to meditate alone. We are bringing our damp log to the campfire of AA. And that is what happens over and over, and it works. And in this healing space, for many of us early in our recovery, it's the only peace we had. The hour that we spent in the room, the coffee afterwards, was the quietest, nicest, peacefulest time that we had. And then we went back, and little by little, we were able to take a teaspoon of that outside of the meeting. And as we grew And we gained some wisdom, which we were not even aware that we were gaining. We started to be able to take more and more of it out of the room with us as we went. And we started to give up the internal dialogue that we had when we came in the room and replace it with a dialogue that is different. The dialogue of recovery, the dialogue of God, the dialogue of spirituality, the dialogue of the steps. And that, when we're grounded, almost becomes our internal dialogue. I find myself today having that be my continuous sense of awareness when I'm plugged in and I'm not caught by something. When I get caught by something, it's not there. I'm still as nuts in those circumstances as I sometimes was, but it doesn't happen very often and doesn't happen. So I think that most of us come with the idea that you should have heard this guy I heard talk this weekend. It was marvelous. I'm going to go home and I'm going to go do that. And we go home and we don't do that. We buy the set of tapes. We don't listen to the tapes. We buy the books. We don't read the books. We're trying to develop a relationship with God, but how many of us regularly read anything that would change our consciousness or relationship? We're lazy, and we're busy, and we're nuts, and we have this internal dialogue going on. We do not have the time. Okay. But I really do think we have this idea that we are going to get better and deal with the circumstances in our lives by getting a little bit more information and by getting a little different technique and by getting a little bit more motivated. And I want to read my favorite paragraph or two in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Page 84 and 85. And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol, for by this time sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor, and if I'm working with a guy who's got a problem with sex or gambling, I sometimes put that word in there. If tempted, we recoil as if from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. We will find that this has happened automatically. Does that sound like I am doing it? Okay. We will see that our new attitude towards liquor has been given to us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we've been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not sworn off, which is what the hell most of us are trying to do with the other issues that we're dealing in our lives. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor afraid. That is our experience, as long as, and that's how we react, as long as we are in fit spiritual condition. That is not done by self. It is not done with effort. It is absolutely not done with resistance. The problems that we have in our lives are psychological. The solutions are spiritual. Time and time again in the book, they'll see these phrases preceding astounding changes all at once, suddenly. You know, no process, change. What happens? The ego goes away. Your identity goes away. The struggle goes away. You are not in charge. When you are not in charge, you're not important anymore. What you want isn't important anymore. When I'm in charge, I have lived most of my life when I'm ego-connected with getting more and getting what I want, avoiding the pain that I do not want to go through. And when I go with my ego and with my mind to make the changes, there's two guard dogs at the temple. Someone reminded me this of today. The two guard dogs that protect the temple. I'm going to the temple and I'm going to make the changes. I'm going to do the work. Okay? First dog, ignorance. I really want to make, I just don't know what to do. You know, if I knew what to do, I'd do it. So then you hang around here long enough that you figure out what there is to do. And then you go to the second dog, apathy. I know what to do, I just can't get myself to do it. Okay. And those are the two dogs that chew our butts up as we try to go, to try to take the trip to go through this process. The process that we are in is a process of finding God, it's a process of coming home. There's nothing wrong. We are complete, intact, whole. Underneath all this stuff is our connection with God. At our deepest level, I believe we are God. I was always afraid that if I really turned my life over to God, I'd have to become a missionary. or I mean, almost joined the priesthood when I was young. Trying to save myself on a part-time basis was absolutely not working. So trying to do it on a full-time basis seemed like that was the thing to do. I care deeply about how I live my life. I just, on my own, am not able to do it in a way that works. When I do it with you, is the best it has ever been. But I still have had a fear that if I really turn my will and my life over to the care of God, my life is going to be dull, and I'm not going to be able to continue to have fun and do the things that I want to do in my life. My treasures. I'm not going to have my treasures. One of my treasures used to be gambling, backgammon. I was a pretty good backgammon player. At some point in time in your life, you discover your treasures are dog turds wrapped in gold tinfoil. They are not what we perceive them to be. And when we unwrap them, we abandon them. There is no, and that's what happens in the process. Why were we happier when we were drinking? Because we dumbed down. We reduced our consciousness. In reducing our consciousness, the pain went away. In Alcoholics Anonymous, we go through the same process, but in reverse. We raise our consciousness. And in raising our consciousness, we are placed in a position of peace and joy. Most of us, when we use the word happy, it's related to circumstances. But peace and joy are not contingent upon circumstances being the way we want them. There are people with very difficult circumstances that have peace and joy. We have all known people who are dying. We all know people who have financial difficulty. We all know people who are struggling through life. And they have peace and they have joy. But you can't do that if you're in your head. You can't do that if you're in your ego. You can't do that if you're self-centered. You can't do that if you're self-directed, which is the largest single thing that we do. It is so tough to find the right teacher. It is not tough to find the right teacher. But most of us have great difficulty doing that. We don't, because most of us don't know how to be a student. Most of us don't know how to turn ourselves in to our sponsors. Develop the relationship that we really have to, you know. We talk sometimes fairly regularly. We share most of it, but most of us are walking around, as Thoreau talked about, with a deep anxiety. Most men lead lives of quiet desperation. Most of us today, and especially in this world, is there any lack of pain today? I mean, this economic collapse has gotten almost everybody. Everybody's got a kid or themselves is out of a job, losing a house. Their 401k became a 101k. I mean, this is, there is enough pain to go around, circumstantial pain. There is no comfort in the world. And sometimes you wonder why it isn't working very easily. Well, there's a wind blowing out there, baby. There's a wind blowing out there. When this book was written in 1939, and when the AA started in 1935, I mean, religion and spirituality were part of the genre of Alcoholics Anonymous, of America. You could have a conversation about God and the values relating to that way of living, and almost everybody would know what you're talking about. Most of the people who came in were churched, were educated. Most of the people who came in were already doing what they were probably going to end up doing for the rest of their lives. They were painters or construction workers or doctors or lawyers or Indian chiefs, whatever the hell they were doing. Today, most of the people are coming in, got in trouble when they were in their teens. They aren't educated. If they were married, they blew through the marriage. They're disconnected with their families. They're not churched. They're not looking to be rehabilitated. They're looking to be habilitated. That isn't true of everybody, but it's more true of what's coming into the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous today than it has ever been. And the good news is we have a process that will restore us to life, that will deal with all those issues. And as Mari talked about, they're not dealable with. I mean, you can't, there is no road from where most of us come in to where most of us would end up if we gave ourselves over to this process. And it is very subtle. And the wind is blowing out there today. I mean, you pick up, you turn on the TV, you turn on the movies, and you open up a magazine, And the whole thing is, the answer is external. What you need is more money, a bigger house, fancier clothes. You in trouble, honey? You shouldn't be in trouble. We'll get you a check. We'll get you a credit card. You shouldn't be having it. You in pain? There should be no pain. Life's not supposed to be painful. Bullshit. And the easier, softer way, the immediate gratification, is what most of us are presented with as an answer to what we're going through. The spiritual answer is a process. But once you enter the process, you almost get the benefit almost immediately if you really are committed to the spiritual process. And the healing takes place once you open your heart up to the process and once you start taking the steps. And once you really start opening yourself up to the changes that you're going to have to make, there's a relief. And there's a sense of knowing that we all have a knower inside of us that has a sense that we're on the right track in what we're doing. We are a community. I don't know where else you would access and see the amount of miracles and changes that we see on a regular basis in Alcoholics Anonymous. It's astounding. It is just astounding. You know, all of us have family members that we'd like to drag to the program and have them have the benefit that happens in these rooms, but they aren't alcoholic, or if they are alcoholic, many of them don't want to come here. I've lived most of my life in Alcoholics Anonymous. My life is not perfect. I struggle with problems. And how long have I been talking? I've been talking 65 minutes? 55? I got 5 minutes left. My sponsor doesn't like me to talk over an hour. No, he doesn't. I mean, he really, that was kind of the, say what you got to say in an hour and get it over with. It isn't, you know, mine can only endure what the rear end can endure. Most of us are distracted more today than we've ever been at any other point. There's more information coming at us, there are more distractions coming at us, and it's tougher and tougher and tougher for us to be focused. Many of us that are focused and involved in the program are focused and involved at the level of ego. Even those of us that give AA talks, I mean, it is very ego-reinforcing. You get picked up, you get treated very well, you come here. It's fun to go to a meeting. You get 43 years. See that guy? He's got 43 years, you know. I mean, it is very ego-reinforcing for me to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you can get distracted. You can actually use the fruits of the program to explain to yourself why you don't have to make any changes or why you don't have to be different. One of the great questions in Alcoholics Anonymous is, when did you stop growing? It takes a courage. The spiritual path is through the fire, not around it. The good news is the fire is illusionary. There is no pain. Once you enter through the fire, there's an opening. And in that opening, we have the experience that most of us had when we let go of our drinking and let go of our drug use. That most of us are in front of life today in a way that we're not sure or willing to apply that to our marriage or apply that to our families or apply it to our work or apply it to our sex lives or apply it to the circumstances that we find ourselves in, because we're in charge of those areas. We built a fence around them. And we're working. I mean, it's just astounding to me how we can build a fence around certain arenas of our lives and not deal with them in the program. And we feel like we're fully engaged in the program. It is astounding to me, and I'd say the one single thing that is necessary for me to continue my spiritual growth is I've got to enlarge my experience of God. My idea of God, it doesn't matter. One of the most powerful things about Alcoholics Anonymous is Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't care what you believe. And there's more and more talk in AA about what we believe. What, you're going to be a good AA? This is what you got to believe. You want to be a good AA? This is what you got to do. There was never that conversation when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous. You were a good AA, you were coming to AA, and you were, you know, if you were not drinking, that was a pretty successful thing. That was a pretty big deal. And now, it's starting to change a little bit. We got the lame members of AA and the not-so-lame members of AA. We got the people who do the work and who don't do the work. I mean, I know people who have the first 164 pages memorized. I wouldn't go on a fishing trip with them if my life depended on it. And many of them are fine folks, but memorizing the menu does not get you to the home that you have to go. You have to dismount the donkey that gets you to the door, to get off the donkey, to open the door, to have the experience. It is experience-based. I read a book called The New Christianity, and it talked about the old Christianity. You had a formula that you had to believe, and if you believed it, you were okay. But today, people don't want the old formula. The formula is not working for them. They want to put their hands on the knobs that bring the transformation, the access to the spiritual principles that are in their lives that can transform and alter their experience of life, to get the peace and joy that is available to us in life. That process is a process of removal, not addition. The process of finding God is one of getting rid of what's in the way. We don't need anything added. And that is what happens in Alcoholics Anonymous. We bring in the accumulation. We bring our broken toolkit. Most of us walk in with a toolkit entirely full of hammers. No screwdrivers, no saws, no wrenches. Only tools, a hammer. Everything looks like a nail. And most of us do not see it as it is, and we do not see ourselves as it is, and we come into this organization. And at some point in time, we realize that we're responsible for the chaos in our lives. We do not see ourselves the way we really are, and we do not see it the way it really is. And we open a new conversation. We bring that damp log to the campfire of AA, and it dries to the bonfire of AA, and it dries out. We tap into the collective consciousness of Alcoholics Anonymous, and incrementally, through the work of the steps, through conversation with our sponsors, through working with others, we obtain and start to enhance a spiritual awakening. That is the only way that we are going to make any changes. What happens is we become more awake. I still have the same tendencies to anger today. I still have the same tendencies to money spending. And I still have the same tendencies towards lots of the problems that I had before, but many of them I don't do because I'm awake. See it or be it. If you don't see it, you are it. When you don't see your alcoholism, you is it. When you saw it was one of the most important moments of your life. When I saw I was abusive to my children, as opposed to what difficult children I had, it was an important moment in my life. And I saw it, and it went away. I'm more awake today than I was before. I am more awake because I've been with you. Thank you for my life.